Monday edition, Mr. Irrelevant, live from the Grubel offices, One Call That's All studio in downtown Milwaukee. Alex Strove, Joshua DiMaggio with you. Hunter Vaughn back at the Everlight Solar Studio in downtown Madison. We're back. We are awake. When we are ready for another great week here on Mr. Irrelevant and ESPN Wisconsin. What a frickin' week into weekend, man. The NFL draft in Green Bay, obviously I was there all of last week. Hunter and Josh were with me Thursday and Friday. What a week. I really don't know how else to say it. Really, really neat week in Green Bay for the NFL draft. 600,000 people, which was double what they estimated prior to the draft, showed up throughout the 3 days of the NFL draft, including one day where there was rain and that derailed people from going to the draft. 600,000. Why do you look surprised?
Wasn't it predicted closer to 200?
Yeah, 250 to 300 was the range.
Okay, I thought it was 200 to 250.
It was 250 to 300, so double, well, almost triple, I guess.
That's what I was.
You look at, yeah. Just awesome. I mean, it was a world class event. It felt like that. I was in there Saturday. You're smiling at me. Am I getting sappy?
No, I'm watching Desmond Watson, the 464-pound defensive tackle. He's at Florida's Pro Day, and every time I see it, it brings up the fact that yes, he did in fact run all those drills faster than you and jump higher and further.
He's three times the size of me.
Yes,
you know.
Well, the good news is, though, a little bit later on, we will see some video of people who ran the 40 slower than Strofe, surprisingly.
That's true. Yeah, it's true. It happened. Vindicated.
Do any of them running it slower have, what's a nice way to put this, devices to pose as legs because they lost theirs?
No. And one of the people that ran slower than Strofe works out regularly.
Whoa.
So, yeah.
Amputees is what I was asking.
We all know, Josh.
That's crazy, man.
Just wanted to be clear.
You made it clear, Joshy. You made it clear.
But to get us back on track, the draft was incredible. Mike Murphy's swan song, the great note to go on, it was the retirement party for him, and he did treat it as such.
He did.
As much as Mark Murphy made the draft about himself, and the Packers seemingly did as well, is there solely because of him, probably, you could say. And I enjoyed myself, despite not getting to enjoy the draft experience in the way I would have. But I got to do really cool things in Green Bay that I probably won't ever do again.
That's true. I'm right there with you. So it was a unique week. It was an awesome week. Well done.
A lot of fans we got to see. A lot of people we got to meet. Incredible.
I guess you just brought up my combine, my failed combine, which, as we've established on the show, will live with me forever. Do you know how many times it was referenced to me by strangers this week?
To imagine many. Untold amounts.
People walked up, Strofe, you're running the 40. No, I'm not. I didn't.
Not nice.
No, not nice. But hey, I understand. It was that bad. So really, 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 really neat week. Capped it off last night celebrating a wedding. Congratulations to Alex and Tyler. Was at a wedding in Racine last night. So I still am running on no sleep.
Oh, where in Racine? My wife's from Racine.
It was at the what's called the Mansion, the Murray Mansion.
Oh, yeah, I've heard of that place. Yeah. Nice
beautiful
place.
Venue.
Yep.
So it was really neat. I'll get to the real stuff. We'll get to the Milwaukee Bucks in just a second. But so at this wedding, it was formerly a chapel. It's this giant building. But it was formerly a church, no longer a church, but obviously people still get married in what seems like a church, right? The stained glass.
Big church guy, I can tell.
Yeah. No Jesus, but there's a picture of Jesus on one of the windows. Anyway.
Well, then there would be a Jesus.
Yeah, he's there.
But not like
he's everywhere.
Not on the altar like you would normally see in a church.
Yes, the tabernacle.
What is that? What that's called?
No.
No. That's a very different thing.
The tabernacle, I believe, is where the Eucharist is stored.
Oh, sure, sure.
Tabernacle is one of my favorite words
that's
to say.
Great word. Anyway, so they have renovated now what was formerly a church into like an event space. So that's where the dance floor was. That's where we ate dinner, yada, yada. But also, in the corner of this church, there's a full-blown bar. So it's like altar and then bar right in the corner there. Very neat. I enjoyed that part. Just figured I'd share that with you.
I feel like, and I don't want to disrespect the happily married couple. I can say that they probably are today, still, at least. Who knows in the future?
Jesus.
That is the most unforgettable weekend to put an event like your wedding for most people in Wisconsin.
I will say this on the record. Leading up, I was a little bit worried I would not be in good shape.
How would you rate your shape that you showed up in?
Showed up in, I was probably like a 4 out of 10.
That's not great.
But by the time I was dressed and the activities began, I was up to like a 9 out of 10. I was in great shape.
Impressive.
And then coasted the rest of the night. I had a great night. I was a great wedding guest if I had to self-evaluate. I danced. I had fun. Anyway. All right, let's get to this, though. This not so fun. The fun part about standing up at a wedding yesterday was that I missed this. I did not watch this live. Damian Lillard goes down as the Indiana Pacers take a 3-1 lead here in Milwaukee last night. It is, unfortunately, sounds like a torn Achilles for Damian Lillard. He had to be carried off the court. And now the Bucks face a 3-1 deficit in the first round of the NBA playoffs. And what that essentially tells you is it's over. It's over for the Milwaukee Bucks. Not only are you not winning a title without Damian Lillard, you're not winning a series without Damian Lillard. And when he was cleared to come back in game two, I think it injected a lot of excitement and even expectations into Bucks fans, right? Oh, man, they've got both their guys. We're healthy. Damian Lillard's healthy. He's back. Giannis is healthy for the first time in several years. This is the year to go on the run. And in a matter of 3 games, 4 games total in the series, it feels like the run is over before it could even begin. As you continue to reflect on the construction of this team, the makeup of this team, it unfortunately highlights that the Damian Lillard trade is a total failure. And that's by nobody's fault, right? You can't predict injuries. You can't predict blood clots. It's ultimately what ended up happening, right? The last several seasons have been about injuries in the postseason, and that's why the runs have fallen so flat since the Bucks won the title in 2021. But at this point, and again, it seems insane to say because I think everybody would take this trade 10 times out of 10, but it is becoming the worst trade ever. In Bucks history, in Wisconsin sports history, it's just what it's become. Because when you add a top 75 player of all time with another top 75 player of all time in Damian Giannis, the expectation is this is a team that should compete for championships. And again, this isn't Damian Lillard's fault. This isn't Giannis's fault. It's not Doc Rivers' fault. It's nobody's fault because you take the trade every time. But it has been an abject failure since Dame's arrival in Milwaukee. And that sucks because what an exciting guy to bring in. What an exciting player to inject some energy into a fan base. But it's just been a failure. And that sucks because this is a team that should be competing for championships. And for the second year in a row, it's going to be a first round exit and maybe even a gentleman's sweep of 5 games to the Indiana Pacers. And just like that, the season ends. So failure is the word on my brain today. Hunter, go ahead.
You said that this the worst trade in Wisconsin sports history, and like I'm not going to go through and like look up Wisconsin sports trades and that, but it just feels like that's just not even fair with this trade to even consider it that way, given how little these guys have played together when it comes to the postseason. Like, regular season doesn't matter in the NBA, so these guys not getting a chance to play together, like, that's just bad luck. That's all it is. It is, like, I don't think the trade should be ranked anywhere or even considered for that if they literally have only played 2 1/8 playoff games together.
But that's the point, Hunter, right? Is they haven't played together.
But it's again, like it's I'm a did not finish. Anybody. Like, it's just, it's an incomplete. Like, I don't even think you
but
give it a grade.
It's not an incomplete. Because it's not an incomplete. It happened. The seasons are still taking place, and you're not winning. So they have happened. Now, without them on the court, I agree with, and that sucks. But if you make a franchise-altering move, like trading for Damian Lillard, and it produces, what, two playoff wins in total? Zero series wins? And obviously a torn Achilles is not a quick recovery, so we might not see Damian Lillard if he is once again a Milwaukee Buck next year, which we'll get to in a second. We're not going to see him. So it's a failure, unfortunate failure, right? Because, again, to your point on they haven't had the opportunity to play together, I agree with that. But the season still took place. The postseasons are still happening, and the Bucks are not winning because of it. And obviously we can look at the other things that happened because of the Damian Lillard trade. Earlier this season, you trade one of your best players in franchise history for Kyle Kuzma to try to elevate this team, and that hasn't worked. So all in all, it's just it's doomsday for the Bucks.
I think the trade is somewhat a victim of the circumstances. I think Drew Holiday does not make the Bucks any sort of real level contender. So going back and just reversing the trade, I don't think puts the Bucks in a realistically better situation than they currently are. Maybe marginally. Maybe they advance, they win one extra playoff series. We do also have to evaluate the fact that not trading for Dame makes it even less likely that Giannis Antetokounmpo would remain a Milwaukee Buck. If it goes well and they fall just short, you got a really good chance you can move on from Dame in a couple of years. The injuries to each of them caused basically the worst possible outcome. I don't know if I could go back and say I'd do the trade again. I don't know what other trade I would have made happen, or even would have been realistic. This is also the risk that teams run when you have an aging superstar like Giannis, who's still one of the best in the world at basketball. Yep. But his years are he's coming closer to the end of his career than we ever really would have expected, seeing as he came here as a child. But the Bucks were in a spot where after the disappointment following the championship, they changed coach, then they likely allegedly hired Giannis's favorite option, and that guy proved to be wholly unfit of the situation. So they fire their coach, they hire another one. Like, there's all these circumstances here that kind of, I don't know, I can't really point fingers at anybody. I don't feel great calling it a failure, but I also can't help but look at the result and consider it a failure. There is some bad luck. It's just what it is.
And look, I say it all the time, especially in the NBA, but I mean, it's applicable to every sport. You got to be three things if you want to win a championship. Got to be good, you got to be healthy, and you got to get lucky.
Yeah.
There's always luck involved in sports. No matter how good you are, you need breaks. And sometimes, you know, those are combined. Healthy and lucky means you're just healthy, and you're the healthier team in a certain matchup. So all in all, yeah, it's hard to call it a failure, but that's what it's been. And that's unfortunate, because to Josh's point, I don't think you can sit here and go, well, John Horst screwed this up, or the coaches screwed this up, or Giannis screwed it. You just can't really Adrian Griffin screwed up, but that was a season and a half ago at this point, right? So to start the season 2-8, to roll the way they did towards the end of the year, and then just to fall flat in the playoffs on top of losing Damian Lillard to what is likely an Achilles tear, it's just a mixture of bad crap. And here we are once again for the second year in a row going, oh, well, they lost to the Pacers.
I don't think if also we've fully, or people have fully reckoned with the fact of how bleeped the Bucks are.
Are you referring to their future?
Yes.
Elaborate.
With Dame likely missing the entirety of the next season, going into what, his year 37 after that, with a massive player option that he has zero incentive to turn down, because I believe that would get close to $50 million for him. Nobody's going to acquire him. Nobody's going to do anything in interest for him. So what the Bucks can possibly do outside of trading Giannis to sort of rebuild the team? Like, they just have to hope Giannis is willing to ride out the next two seasons?
Yeah.
I mean, good luck.
Yeah.
As loyal as he is to everyone here and how dedicated he is to the community and building something with the Bucks, they're stuck in a no-win situation right now.
I think it's... Well, look, we do this thing every year, especially at a national level. I don't know if we do it as much locally here in Milwaukee or Madison, but it's always brought up. Is Giannis's time in Milwaukee over? And I think right now, once this season comes to a close, obviously they still need to lose one more game to the Pacers for that series to be over. Once this season comes to a close, I think it's the realest it's ever been. Because when you look at the current setup of the Milwaukee Bucks, they are not set up to win a championship in the near future. They're just not.
No. The distant future is looking bleak.
And yes, you have one of the best players in the world, but as we've learned in the NBA, that's just not enough to win a championship. So now it is a real question of, does Giannis force his way out? And I think he'd have every right to do it. I don't think a lot of fans would say, well, that's a dumb decision, because it wouldn't be. And that's something you have to come to terms with at some point is, okay, is this offseason actually the time that Giannis is going to go elsewhere? Because I'm not writing it off.
Yeah, the big question remaining is Giannis willing to make the stink, publicly request the trade, and then be a malcontent to get out of Milwaukee? Because I don't think the franchise, by any means, is going to be the one pushing to remove Giannis from the equation. No matter how bleak the future looks with Giannis, you're still better off with him in terms of like literal evaluation of your team, selling tickets, selling merch. Like, the team has no incentive to trade him. Zero.
You know, I'm looking at just Spotrac to try and be positive about this and not make this such a doomsday segment here. Like, Brook Lopez, he's making $23 million this year. He's off the books. He's a free agent. He's going to go, like, he'll go L.A., Boston, somewhere that he can try and get one more ring. There's a player option for Bobby Portis that they have listed at $13 million, Pat Connaughton, $9 million, and Kevin Porter Jr., $2.5 million. I don't know if Bobby's going to take that, because he might be able to make more as a free agent. Pat Connaughton, we're going to be paying him that $9 million. Like, that's just happening, because he's not making that on the open market. So there is some money that's going to get freed up here a little bit, I guess, but Kyle Kuzma will be here at 22. So there's some things that they could still do here next year with some more money being available off of Brook Lopez not being around, and if Bobby goes somewhere else, that they could maybe get some guys, and maybe they finally, those off-season additions help this team. Like, let's be honest,
even trying to build the hope, which I think, no fault to you, Hunter, fell adequately short.
I know, I'm just, that's the best I got, Josh.
I know,
okay?
What you're doing, and I'm not being mean, I'm not dismissing you, I know exactly what you're doing, but there is, with what the Bucks would need,
I feel sad.
That player is not going. They could get marginally better, and that's the best case you can make for them.
I'm glad we all are very happy today. This is good.
Yeah. I mean,
I was before Dame tried to push that ball forward. Like, I just literally just kept thinking after it happened, like, just stand there, just go back and play defense. It's one possession, and then he would have been fine.
So nobody's picking them to rally here in a 3-1 deficit.
Can I interest you in Fred VanVleet and Naz Reid maybe next year?
Naz Reid I'd be open to.
Oh, I was going to say Fred VanVleet.
Santiago Aldama?
Yeah, no. I mean, sure, but no. Huh. Well.
What about Kelly Oubre?
There we go.
I get the college version?
John Collins? Ty Jerome.
Only if we get 2021 John Collins.
Yeah, right. We're
Caris LeVert.
We're doing nothing for optimism. You're doing nothing for me right now.
Hey, LeBron James.
At least I tried.
Now that's something I can get behind. Give me a 40-year-old LeBron and 35-year-old Dame.
If Dame was healthy, like there's a chance there, but
yeah. All right. Well, glad we're all very optimistic about the Milwaukee Bucks. So, Josh, you know, 3-1 comeback for the Bucks?
No. I mean no disrespect to our great partner, the Bucks. You could have told me the game on Friday didn't happen. Yes, Friday. Somebody updated me at like 10 p.m. Hey, the Bucks won. Said, oh, that's neat.
Yeah, I also heard about that. I was too locked in on the NFL draft, which we'll get back to, and I kind of want to unpack everything the Packers did here in the 2025 NFL draft as the host city over the weekend. Terrific time. And then we found out on Sunday that the Bucks are done for. So, really fun stuff.
The biggest thing we found out from this weekend, the three of us, is I dominate when put into situations to become leader. Dominate.
Yeah, so we talked about this a little bit on Friday, but we need to reset it up. So, for those of you that aren't aware, which I imagine is plenty of you,
yeah,
Good Karma Brands, our company, our parent company, owns two houses right outside of Lambeau Field. And we have a combined backyard, which is where we throw a tailgate, we do parties, that's where we do the show I host, Green Bay Game Day, the pregame show, every home game, we do it from there. And for the entirety of draft week, starting Wednesday through Saturday, we were hosting all sorts of people, we were putting on different events, you know, like we had head coach Matt LaFleur was there on Thursday, he did a Q&A with Wilde and Tausch that was strictly in the backyard, right? We didn't broadcast this, it was strictly in the backyard, so people are walking into the draft and stopping at the fence to listen to that. Mark Tauscher, Brian Bulaga did a grill-off presented by our friends at Pit Boss, which was just awesome. Tucker Kraft, our buddy Tucker Kraft, who posted Josh on his Instagram story, was the judge. He was there. I did a Q&A with Carrington Valentine, our new friend, Packers cornerback. So there was a ton of stuff. Melvin Gordon, James White, Gary Ellerson did a Q&A with Jim Rutledge about the Badgers and their backfield, being a running back of Wisconsin, yada, yada, right? So we did a lot of those. And
David Gruber was getting catcalled. You can't forget that.
He was. That's true. That did happen. So at one point, you know, essentially, long story short, it was a change of plans you couldn't account for.
Unforeseen circumstances.
Right. That essentially catapulted Josh into a leadership role for some reason, for whatever reason. So Josh, he's wearing headphones right now, but they're not quite the same. He was wearing more of a headset, you know, like a movie director.
Like a head coach or offensive coordinator wears.
Yes. On the sideline. With a microphone and one headphone.
Yeah.
And then just sits on your head. And Josh had that thing on his head all week. Thursday, Friday, Saturday, all week. And many people have referred to Josh DiMaggio as, quote, I'm reading this verbatim, the MVP of the week.
Big time players step up in big time situations.
Yeah.
That's all I could say. Also, I learned if you want to be taken seriously, put a headset on.
You were getting asked questions you had no idea the answers to.
Stuff I should have never been answering, but stuff I was like, well.
He got asked about the electrical wiring at one point.
Oh, yeah, that was something else. I was more respectful to Josh than I think I've ever been. Like, and there was nothing changed. It was just that headset was on. I'm like, I got to actually take Josh seriously.
I was being asked what security guards were supposed to be doing. I was getting asked all sorts of things. I was like, I'm just going to say something here, and I'm going to hope for the best.
Say it with your chest. Well. And
Yeah, I had many people come up and tell me how much they enjoyed everything we put on there at the Tundra Trio. And I didn't understand why. I was like, why do you, like, other than people just like being nice, I was like, why am I getting picked out of this crowd with everybody saying like, oh, I'm having a great time, this is such a good event? And then I realized I was one of the few visible people on Friday, especially with the headset on. So everyone thought, well, this guy must be important. And I mean, I was responsible for a lot, to put it fairly. I got probably assumed more responsible than I really was because of it. But hey, big time players step up. That's simple matter of the fact.
Yeah, simple matter of the fact. And big time player did step up in Josh DiMaggio.
We did something with what we did for the second night of the draft, which I didn't know was possible until it happened. And that was you guys sitting on stage with wireless mics broadcasting that over the radio and on the YouTube. I didn't know. When I said, yeah, we're doing this, I was just hoping for the best.
And it worked. It worked. Sounded good. Good quality. Yeah. So, anyway. All right. Good work, boys. So, a couple of observations, takeaways from the NFL draft. Number one, that is such a damn party. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is. The way it was advertised was it's going to be a big event. It's going to be a party. I didn't expect what we got.
It delivered.
It was to the level of, I've never seen anything like it.
No.
I've never been a part of anything like the NFL draft.
And back to crediting Mark Murphy, Brian Gutekunst, the NFL, there was multiple moments throughout the weekend that were memorable. Obviously, the Matthew Golden, and for the first time in 22 years, that obviously, the crowd pop. I actually watched a lot of the video. Might have been a lot of non-ball knowers in the crowd. Because when Mark Murphy first said, for the first time in 22 years, there's a lot of blank stares.
Not a lot of ball knowers.
Uh-huh.
Speaking of which, you're a non-ball knower because 2002 to 2025 is 23 years.
Did he say 23?
Yeah, it's a 22.
What was it?
22 draft streak, 23-year streak.
See? Because I believe I quoted him directly when I said, for the first time in 22 years.
Dare I say, maybe Mark Murphy doesn't know ball?
Well,
dare I say that about a two-time Super Bowl champion?
That accusation has been launched his way before. I was not going to do that.
I think he knows ball.
But, I mean, the Sorrell moment was awesome, him coming out.
Yeah, Baron Sorrell, yeah.
Just so many things happened throughout it that made it a really cool, not only for like the NFL as a whole, the draft and getting the scenes they got and the visuals, the Packers delivered in a big way that helps elevate the event as well.
Yeah, definitely. What other observations? Not as much puke as I was expecting to see. I only had to step over one pile on Friday morning.
Are we talking about observations of the actual draft? Because we haven't done any of that.
Oh, we're going to get to that.
Since we turned the mics on.
Oh, well, we're going to do that. No. I want to do the event first, and then we'll get to the players.
Not as much traffic as I expected.
Traffic was not bad.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe it.
I was blown away. Like, parking wasn't bad.
Yeah. I kept looking.
I think a lot of people took buses.
Yes. I think it was a lot of buses, a lot of Ubering. And they did smartly, if you had to take an Uber at any point, they did have the drop-offs quite a distance from the actual stadium, because that's where things on game days get hectic.
Right.
Is everybody's trying to basically get as close as possible, and they told basically those decisions were, you're not getting closer than this, and you just got
to
walk.
One final observation, then we'll get to Matthew Golden and the rest of the picks that came in over the course of the three-day event. So I went into the draft twice. I went in Saturday, I left, and then I went back Saturday afternoon. Mm-hmm. I didn't get scanned for a ticket either time.
Yeah,
same.
I was told to download that app, and I didn't have to scan anything.
So, did you guys walk through a turnstile of any sort?
No.
No. Just the metal detector. That went off for me, and I was really annoyed about it. I was not happy.
I don't want to get conspiratorial.
Uh-oh. Uh-oh.
Do we think, perhaps...
Yes.
The NFL's One app running in the background of your phone may be able to deem you are within the boundaries of said place.
Oh, that's not what I thought you were going to say at all.
Yes.
I thought you were going to say, do you think the NFL just guessed? Which I kind of do.
I also want to give them, I mean, there were snipers on the top of Lambeau Field.
Oh, there always is, though.
Yeah. I want to give them some credit where I have a feeling there is probably some technology that, if used improperly, wouldn't be enjoyable for us to know about. But when it is, we're counting people entering and leaving a stadium, it's okay. Like, I would imagine there's something going on there where they're able to track that without it being actively you're spinning and they're counting the numbers that are on each turnstile.
Mm.
Could it be your app in the background? Very well.
99% chance that you're correct. The 1% is that along with the metal detectors, they had something, and like there's basically an invisible type of turnstile sort of a deal.
That's kind of what
I've never heard the word turnstile used so many times.
Turnstile, great band. Listen to them.
I'm not surprised that that's a band name.
What type of music do they sell?
Former hardcore band that jumped more into the poppy indie dream pop world.
Oh, that's like my type of stuff.
I was going to guess like prog rock.
You might like them. Yeah. They're a little more aggressive than you're used to, but they are not your butt rock style, but they're a little, you know.
Can you not say butt rock?
I mean, you're a butt rock guy. You're the foremost expert on butt rock.
You're the face of butt rock.
You are. Butt face.
Got it.
That's fair. Okay, we're done here. All right, let's talk about the draft. The Packers, 8 new Packers into Green Bay. Now, I may have missed it at the end of day 3, but I don't think they traded at all, did they?
No.
So Mark Murphy's prediction of trading up once and trading back twice was incorrect?
I do know, I didn't get to listen to the full thing, that there were points at which the Packers would have liked to have traded back, but there was not, they were not met with interest by anyone.
Hmm. Okay. Got it. Let's just roll through this. Round one, Matthew Golden, the wide receiver out of Texas. We obviously got plenty of opportunity to react to that on Friday. But this is super exciting, right? To nick the trend, nicks the trend of not drafting a receiver in the first round.
Nick the trend.
Shroff words, well, so good.
I hate it here.
You know, no, you don't.
You create a show in September of 2023 that, you know, you want to use as an opportunity to get your takes off. You want to use it as an opportunity to entertain. You want to use it as an opportunity to create memories and create, you know, memorable content. And then as you continue to evolve that show, you add a co-host by the name of Josh DiMaggio, and you continue to let Hunter Vaughn play a very big role on the air. And all three of us have kind of created and turned into the Mr. Irrelevant crew of sorts.
Mm-hmm.
Except when, as this show has continued to evolve, it has just become a show where I get made fun of.
Yeah, no, you're the target.
Yeah. The show is literally titled Mr. Irrelevant. Implying you are not relevant. So, yeah, you're going to be the butt of most of the jokes.
Real quick, Shams Charania just reporting, Milwaukee Bucks star Damian Lillard has been diagnosed with a torn left Achilles.
Yeah.
Sources tell ESPN, MRI today revealed the severity, a devastating end to a season. That's Shams Charania. So there you go. That is that is official. Whew. All right, back to the draft. Second round pick I was very intrigued by. Big boy. And by the way, that actually was kind of a theme of the Packers draft this year. Big MFers.
I mean, it generally is.
A lot of size this year, though. Anthony Belton, 6'6", 335 pounds. Left tackle from NC State, North Carolina State. Had a nice college career, played a lot of football. Obviously has incredible size. But it's an intriguing pick because, A, number one, right, you will always take more offensive line depth. We saw what the Packers did in Philadelphia in the wild card loss, right? You lose one starter and you kind of crumble in terms of your offensive line and the consistency there. So you add depth, but you drafted a tackle in the first round of last year's draft in Jordan Morgan, who didn't play a ton and didn't play tackle at all in 2024. You now add Anthony Belton to the mix, and you have pending contracts or expiring contracts for both of your tackles, right? Zach Tom, who I imagine the Packers will work diligently to extend, and Rashid Walker at left tackle, whose contract is up after this year. You add Anthony Belton as a depth piece. I think this signifies to me one way or another, Joshy, he's probably a starting tackle of the future, just not in 2025.
Yeah, I think right now he's the starting tackle. Well, I know for a fact he's not a starting tackle because Brian Gutekunst said as much, that he would not be in the competition for the left tackle. What that means is Sean Ryan either loses his spot to him or Sean Ryan will eventually lose a spot to Belton. They feel right now that a place they went from going into the offseason is kind of really having to figure out. They seem deep there and flush with talent. And I mean, right now there's 7 guys on that offensive line that you would feel pretty damn good about playing. They also told us that despite what I think most of us who aren't really grinding left tackle tape, despite what we thought about Rashid Walker and him being fine to good at times, the Packers were not happy with whatever he's done. They've added, keep adding more and more options. And the same applies to Sean Ryan, frankly.
Totally.
That despite, I thought both of them having pretty good seasons, they were definitely NFL level starters.
100%.
They want to improve and get even better up front. And that was a, it was something that was signaled by their going out and adding Aaron Banks. And then they hammered it home by drafting Belt in the second round.
Yeah, and they stayed with offense through the second day of the draft. Third round pick, Savion Williams, the wide receiver of the Horned Frogs, Texas Christian University. He's a big boy, too. 6'4", 220 pounds, and did play in college every position. X, yep. Z, slot, does it all. The big thing on draft reviews or his draft profiles on various websites was, if he goes to a creative play caller and a creative offensive-minded coach, they will have the opportunity to unlock him. And he winds up with a very creative offensive coach in Matt LaFleur. This feels to me, so to go two wide receivers in the first three rounds, number one, I think tells you what Brian Gutekunst thinks of the wide receiver room.
No good.
Yeah. It's not good enough. That's
remember us reacting to, I feel good about that room?
Yeah.
He lied again to our face.
Yeah, he does that.
And this one I understand because it's CYA. You're not going to be able to draft every guy you want to. You'll be put in spots where some of these guys won't be available to you. I can, as much as we've sort of tried to pick apart what happened at 23rd overall, I think the Packers were still surprised that Matthew Golden was there. They might have been disappointed that Derek Harmon wasn't there.
Agreed.
From at pick 21, but I believe they also were surprised that Matthew Golden was still an option for them, which they were happy to make the pick. At 23, Williams is not the fastest guy ever.
No.
Plenty of speed to be an NFL player, though. So don't get that, like, let's not get it twisted there. But ideal size, not the most ideal production, but he has been to varying degrees productive every year that he played in college. And I think the intrigue here is, despite him seeming like a guy you would just line up on the outside and run fly routes with and nines and just go downfield and make plays, he's much more than that. He was taking traditional handoffs out of the backfield. He was used on like jet sweeps and some of those like gadgetier plays that we saw Jaden Reed doing. I think having both of them on the field provides a particularly interesting tactical advantage where those two guys are both capable to go out and catch passes downfield as much as they are to take a sweep, take a reverse, take a quick screen, all that type of stuff.
And I love what the Packers did day three. What they did day three was awesome, right? Edge. So Baron Sorrell, that was the pick who was in Green Bay. Goodell came back out day three, was the only pick he announced on day three outside of maybe the final one.
Right, because Baron decided to
just go
to the draft, hang out there. He knew he wasn't going to be drafted in the first round. He thought maybe he would be picked on day two, but then decided, hey, I'm here already. Let's go to the green room. It's going to be fine.
He was in there by himself.
Yeah.
I wonder if that becomes a more common thing. That players are just going to be like, I want to go.
Right. That's my thought.
That's what I would do.
Especially, like, I get to go to Green Bay. I get to get called on stage. Now, I think there is probably a connection here between the fact that I have a feeling that Packers brass and Baron had discussions about the likelihood of him being there. And they said, we think it could possibly be a great moment of not only for TV, but for the fans in attendance. You'll get to be there in front of them, use the selfie stick, do your Lambo leap in Lambo, which you didn't get all the way up on. We'll work on that.
Yep.
But it is a cool idea because, go out and enjoy it.
Of the Texas draft picks, what was the hey, we need to work on that more story? Was it Baron Sorrell's quasi Lambo leap, or was it Matthew Golden's Green Bay on three rather than
Green
Bay
on three? Yeah. Baron, I would love to see him in the end zone as a Green Bay Packer.
I would too.
I don't envision that happening all that often, but he's been widely regarded as like the Packer steal of the draft. Seems to be a guy that just sort of got lost in the shuffle because, as we talked about in my draft preview, there were so many edges and that class was so deep that a guy like him sort of became option number 18 or 19. Like, it seems like he should have been a top 100 pick.
Now, so he goes 124. At 159 in the fifth round, they draft another edge, Colin Oliver, who it seems a lot of people are gushing over out of Oklahoma State. 6'1", 240.
Smaller guy.
Yeah, 6'1", 240, but was disruptive. Missed a lot of last season with a foot injury, but played a ton of football his freshman, sophomore, and junior years. Second team All Big 12 all 3 years.
I think the perfect vision for him is sort of, remember what they were doing with Micah Parsons when he first came into the league? Now, obviously, that's top of the line expectations, but a guy who can play both the traditional off-ball linebacker and then line up on the edge. I'm not comparing him by any means to Micah Parsons, but he's that size and style of player.
Yep. Agreed with that. Round six, defensive tackle Warren Brinson out of Georgia. Seventh round, a cornerback, the only cornerback they draft. Michael Robinson out of Tulane, a guy they hosted on a top 30 visit. And then an offensive lineman in their final pick, John Williams, who also a big MF-er, 6'4", 322. Played a bunch of tackle at Cincinnati, where he played his college ball. So all in all, it seems like the Packers addressed most of their needs in the draft. Maybe just not in the way that we anticipated. Wide receiver early and often, and then edge later.
Yes, that was a little surprising, but they did address that position with three different options, and two of those picks they believe can play both inside on the defensive line and the traditional edge position. So as we know with the Packers, they love their positional flexibility, guys who can line up in a 3-4-5 technique or line up in the traditional wide nine rushing the edge. I think the biggest takeaway, and I've seen a lot of people who made claims that they're now having to backtrack and they're trying to find their way out of, is the Green Bay Packers, as I've said for 2 months, feel good about their cornerback room, because given the opportunity seven times to draft a different cornerback, they chose not to. Now, first round, you can say, hey, the guys weren't there, you didn't like the value, you decided not to make it. But second, third, fourth, fifth, and sixth round, go back without them even entering into the cornerback market, tells you that you may disagree. You may not like Nixon, Hobbs, Valentine as the three main corners there, but the Green Bay Packers and Jeff Hafley are more than happy with those guys there.
0% chance Jair's back? I shouldn't say zero. 1% chance Jair's back?
I think it's 1%, and that's the max.
But I unfortunately
When Brian Gutekunst, because I believe Matt LaFleur said Jair was in attendance for the virtual minicamp that they had because the draft is in town. When asked then, Brian Gutekunst said, does that mean he's on the team? And he did not give any...
Well, he is on the team.
Does that mean he will be on the team?
Gotcha.
Is what I meant. Yeah, he did not give any indication that, yeah, he's there and we're going forward.
For Goody last week to say we're going to go through the draft and reevaluate with him and then to not draft the corner, it tells me maybe they're open to it, but I think it's unlikely he'd be back if I was the general manager.
I also think when you look at the cornerback room, well, we have really the three names and that's all it besides some of the practice squad guys and like the back of the roster lingering. The Packers have three safeties they think can play at least slot corner. So that room, when you make it all-encompassing, I mean, Javon Bullard played most of his season last year at the slot position.
Correct.
He played as the nickel corner. So clearly, they feel more than happy with what they have there, because if they didn't, you would make sure you get yourself... If you thought you were as deficient as some of the fans seem to have believed them to be in that cornerback room, they would have simply made a pick.
Well said. Well said. All right. Well, I say it every year, and we'll dive deeper into the draft and the implications it has on the Packers later in the week. But I say this every year, and Hunter, thank goodness, reminded me that we were going to do this today, because I did forget about it. I hate draft grades. They're dumb. I know they're easy clicks, but you can't grade something that hasn't happened yet. Right, that's like grading the homework before the homework's even given out to the class.
When do you deem it? When can you make draft grade? How many seasons of football?
At least
can you
two.
Play?
At least two.
I think it's two. I'd prefer three.
I was going to say four. I think you give guys 4 years. Yeah, because then those back end of the draft guys have had an opportunity to like, okay, are they going to make it through the NFL or not, kind of a thing.
Sure.
So then it's the entire draft, I think, then you're ready to go.
I do tend to agree with you, but the Packers have let some of those guys go. And that feels like it's becoming more and more of the way teams are approaching it. Like, how many years did... Amari Rodgers, it was in his third year that he was released. Jamon Moore, I believe, before the start of his third year was released. Like, if they think there's nothing there, teams are quicker to move on than in the past.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I agree. But anyway, draft grades. Hate them.
Yeah.
But everybody does them. So, Joshua, what you and I are going to do today is we are going to grade the draft grades. So, Hunter has a list of draft grades from across the internet, and we are going to give our grade of their draft grade for the Green Bay Packers. Hunter, the floor is yours.
All right. We're going to start with ESPN and Mel Kiper Jr. He said in his, before I give you the grade, a quote was, "Despite how well the Packers addressed their biggest need, I was scratching my head with their approach to their second biggest. Green Bay had 8 picks and used only 1 at corner." Mel Kiper Jr. gave the Packers a B.
I give Mel Kiper Jr. a D. He had a rough weekend.
I like Mel. Mel is the reason I'm so into the draft. He had an F weekend. He derailed the programming because of Shedeur Sanders.
Yeah.
It was pretty entertaining, though.
It was. I enjoyed it as a viewer, but, I mean, Reese Davis was fighting for his life out there.
Yeah, he was. He was.
Poor Reese.
Poor Reese. Yeah, Mel had a rough weekend. I agree with the grade, I guess, but I give him a D.
I mean, the main thing I said about the cornerback room is what he went to as something the Packers just didn't forget about their cornerback room.
Correct. It's not something they've just forgotten about.
So Mel Kiper might view it as a need. Many of the fans might view it as a need. The Packers didn't. They told us.
Yeah.
They told it loud and clear. Bright blinking signs. Our cornerback room's good enough.
Grading the draft grades here on Mr. Irrelevant. Alex Stroff, Joshy DiMaggio, Hunter Vaughn with you. Hunter, what's next?
Pro Football Focus. They gave the Packers a B-. Had no analysis, just facts about each player.
I'm going to give Pro Football Focus a D because along with their way of grading and evaluating players, they leave it in the dark and sometimes use incorrect evaluations. So, the lack of support to their claims, it seems to be an institutional approach.
Yeah, I'm a D-minus here. I need something. Tell me why you're giving it a B if you're going to grade it. This is almost an incomplete. D-minus for PFF.
We'll go to Sports Illustrated. Don't know if this one was done by AI. They gave the Packers a C+.
Hell.
And a quote from it was, either they didn't like what they saw from their receivers last season, or they really wanted a crowded receiving core. Perhaps the Packers focused too much on the offensive side and waited too long to add another pass rusher.
What was their grade?
C+.
I'm giving them a C-.
Yeah, I think I tend to agree. At least you gave me some evaluation, but I don't necessarily agree with the crowded receiving core point at all.
Do you think the person who wrote this or the machine is aware that Christian Watson will not be playing for 3 quarters of the season?
No shot.
I would guess no. So you really only have 5 or 6 receivers right now, which is a normal receiving core.
Does they, we'll use that term, do they know that Romeo Dobbs didn't participate because he didn't like the amount of targets he had gotten less than a year ago.
He skipped
no
work,
shot.
That's what you're saying?
Okay, so I don't think that room's all that crowded. You've got your 5 guys. Romeo's not going anywhere unless something like catastrophic happens behaviorally.
Yep.
And they're likely going to have 6 on the roster. So most people want to have 5, and the Packers, you can argue, will they eventually have the top 10 number 1 wide receiver alpha? Who knows? We haven't seen Matthew Golden play yet. But they needed more, and that was very evident if you watch the Packers play.
One last one. Bleacher Report, also giving a C+. Their quote,
was it a slideshow?
No, it wasn't actually, but I couldn't jump nice down to the Packers, so it counts as a slideshow.
Naturally.
Green Bay may need to see a big jump in passing production for this draft to be considered a success in their C+ grade.
Well, no bleep, yeah. Bleep. No bleep, Sherlock, whatever I'm trying to say. You get my point. Obviously, they need their players to be good in order for the draft to be viewed as good.
Yeah.
Thank you for spelling that one out for me. I give this an F. That's horrible.
Yeah, I mean, they said a lot of words that didn't mean a whole lot.
Correct.
It was an F analysis. I don't really know what to even make of what they said. Like, the players need to be good. That's the goal. That's what they set out to do, given the circumstances.
That's literally every single team.
Can you repeat the sentence again?
Yeah, read that one more time for us.
Green Bay may need to see a big jump in passing production for this draft to be considered a success.
So I think what they're hinting at is the passing offense didn't put up like gaudy numbers or impressive numbers. And they're intimating that it seems like the Packers still want to be a run first team, which very well may be the case. But there is a lot of improvement to be seen, both in Jordan Love's like raw counting numbers and like just the receivers and how many yards they attribute to the offense. Like, I do think people are going to, and we're going to have to fight, I'm calling this on the 28th of April. We are going to have to fight the, well, nobody had more than 70 catches. Nobody had 1,200 yards. Were they that good? But when taken in totality, you will see, I hope, a great improvement as just like a passing offense. So where they rank as a passing offense, I do expect and need to see a significant jump there.
I fully agree with you on that. I mean,
I just said it better than Bleacher Report. Slideshows, bro.
Bleacher Report says, in order for this draft to be viewed as a success for the Green Bay Packers, the players that they drafted have to play.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And preferably well.
That'd be great.
Dynamite. Insight there from Bleacher Report. Absolute dynamite. You learn something new every day. We learn something new today. It's time now for What We Learned, which is presented by Door County Distillery. Locally produced, handcrafted, award-winning spirits made locally in beautiful Door County. Have a little bourbon. Have the single malt whiskey. Have the gin. Have the Rock Island rum. Everything they do it great. Their cherry brandy is infused with local Door County cherries. As you may know, Door County known for cherries, and their cherry brandy pretty darn good with the local Door County cherries for your old fashioned or anything you're mixing up. So make sure you check them out. DoorCountyDistillery.com is the website, available wherever great local liquor is sold. Okay, so we mentioned this at the top of the show. A couple of our ESPN Wisconsin personalities tried the 40-yard dash at Lambeau Field.
Mm-hmm.
And it did not go very well for them. Corey Sparks, Wally Lukaczynski, Pablo Iglesias. All three of them ran the 40-yard dash outside of Lambeau Field. Now, what are you getting at?
I see why. Maybe your time was not eclipsed. When I see those three guys, like each of them a lot, I don't think speed demons. which even if they take longer to run the 40 than you, I don't think this is a win for you.
I'm not necessarily calling it a win.
Yeah.
I'm just saying
it could have been worse.
I didn't lose. I don't look like a fool like the big defensive tackle from Florida made me look, right? So here is Pablo Iglesias, Wally Lukaczynski, and Corey Sparks running the 40-yard dash at the NFL draft this week. Here's that video for you.
Corey and Wally also Pablo doing in it middle. In suit coats, by
suits.
The way.
Yeah, they're wearing suits. So Corey is on the far right.
Wind resistance.
Wally was on the left, and Pablo's in the middle.
Pablo and also false started.
You will see their times pop up. Corey won 6 seconds. 605. Pablo with a 625. And Wally was near 7 seconds.
Yeah.
It's fair.
All slower than me.
I mean, Wally ran a 50-yard dash because he didn't stay in his lane.
But again, like, Pablo also, like, he's the one that I said works out regularly. Like, he's in good shape.
Yeah.
He shouldn't be running slower than Strofe at
That's
all.
That's true.
So,
I mean, I don't know.
What do you mean?
You are the ideal body type to be a sprinter. as much as Pablo is in the gym and working hard, I don't imagine him doing a lot of explosive movements. I imagine it's like cardiovascular health and like I don't see him doing many dashes. You have the leg up on everyone. You're the tall, skinny guy.
That's true. It's true. I am the tall, skinny guy. Well, I'll take my victory lap. I was faster than 6.05.
This is sad.
I was faster than 6.25. It's good stuff. Hey, coming up on SportsCenter in a couple minutes, Packers' newest wide receiver, Matthew Golden, going to join SportsCenter on ESPN.
He seems to be taking the right approach here and making himself publicly available and like trying to endear himself to Packers fans, which, as we know here, if you're great, we'll love you forever. And even if you're not so good, we'll still love you.
That's true.
A.J. Dillon.
A.J. Dillon. You wrap your arms around us, baby.
Yeah.
You're in.
We just want to be loved here.
We just want to be loved.
We heard people get so sensitive about Mike Greenberg's tweets and Cam Ward saying there's nothing to do there. If you just like throw us a bone, talk about cheese curds, maybe mention Culver's in there, you're ours forever.
Matthew Golden told me when I talked to him on Wednesday, if you missed that conversation, you can find it in the podcast. His favorite cheese is Kraft Singles. So we're going to need to...
Yeah, we'll work on that.
Can we?
Chef Ed chimes in on the chat and said, "Strofe is built like a lump noodle."
What does that mean?
I don't know.
Limp noodle. I think you probably meant.
Yeah. Yeah, the waving, wacky, inflatable.
Jim Rutledge has called me that for years.
Yeah,
so that's fair. All right, anybody else? What we learned?
I just have a tweet here. I don't know if I learned this. I just want to read this out loud because it's one of the more absurd things I've ever seen in my life. Geez.
Here we go.
This comes from at Jacob the Clipper. One of my homies, parentheses, who I have hooped with countless times since childhood until our 30s, texted me today. Quote, "Ant-Man reminds me of you, LOL. I think it's the constant trash talking and physicality," end quote. This is how I hoop. I love talking trash and being physical with my opponent. That is why I can't stand Brown in most of the league today. They play soft, coddled hoops. Check up and go at each other. Nobody wants to see acting and whining. Fist emoji. This is a approximately mid-30s white guy who decided to take to the internet and tell everyone that the number one overall pick in the NBA draft a few years ago and one of the burgeoning superstars in all of sports, they actually have more in common than you would think. Shout out Jacob the Clipper for embarrassing himself for the entire internet to see.
That was good. I like that.
I learned Graham Mertz, destined to be the GOAT. He was taken two spots ahead of where Tom Brady was at pick 197 to the Houston Texans. Graham Mertz.
Does that mean he's going to have double the career?
Yeah.
14 Super Bowls?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. They're going to trade C.J. Stroud because they see what they have in Graham Mertz. He's a leader of men.
If I were to put the over-under of Graham Mertz NFL snaps taken, and not preseason, in regular season or playoffs, at 75, are you on the over or the under?
I have to take the over. I believe in my guy.
Do you believe in it?
Yes.
That's a no.
I believe in my guy. He's going to do it.
Wait a minute. Hunter, did you see that the Graham Mertz is good Twitter account person was there with a sign that said draft Graham Mertz?
Yes.
But they don't show their face. It's an anonymous source.
Yes. I saw that. And I wish I would. I didn't see it until Sunday because had I seen that they were there, I would have reached out to them because like we have DM'd that account multiple times. This station has. And I would have tried to get them on the show. I wish I would have seen it sooner.
Incredible. All right. Well, that will do it for us today. We're back with you Wednesday beginning at 12:30 Central, ESPN Milwaukee, ESPN Madison on YouTube. Thanks to Joshy. Thanks to Hunter.
I just want to put out there that if the Graham Mertz is good account is ever slated to join the show, I'll be walking off the show.
Oh, stop it. You're telling me that someone that has dedicated an account to Graham Mertz, you don't have any questions for that person.
No,
you're a liar.
Other than how's your mom's basement?
Okay.
When was the last time you changed your underpants?
That's disrespectful and rude. You would not be that rude to a guest, an esteemed guest with thousands of followers.
How many Mountain Dews did you have this week?
Well, we asked Strofe that anyways, so.
Yeah, that's actually just on brand. Also, Hunter.
Lubriderm or Cetaphil?
Hunter, this account doesn't even have hundreds of followers. That account has 67 followers.
More than me.
All right, we're done here. We'll talk to you Wednesday. Peace.